WHFR, Dearborn.
Listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and welcome to Impact. Impact is a public affairs talk program where we bring you a special segment about a nonprofit organization, group, people, or just basically people who are trying to do good within their community, neighborhood, or around the world. And today we are actually going to be spotlighting something that the station here, 89.3, is going to be doing tomorrow evening, and it's called the Homelessness Marathon. The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcast nationally, and what our station here is going to be one that is broadcasting as well, and it starts at 7 p.m. tomorrow evening, and it goes through 9 a.m. Thursday morning. It's all throughout the night. This is not a fundraising event. And what I'm going to do here now, I actually have a couple of staff members with me as well here in the studio, as they were very much involved with the Homelessness Marathon last year that WHFR actually was the official broadcast station. So I'd like to welcome Lynn and Dennis into the studio and on to Impact. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, I'm still trying to catch up on my sleep.
Definitely want to get the word out about the Homelessness Marathon, a phenomenal awareness-raising entity.
You made a really good point, Kristen. This is not about... Oh, just turn that up? Oh, okay. This isn't about raising money. This is about raising awareness, which obviously is so important, you know?
I mean, I learned so much last year.
What'd you learn, Lynn?
For the most part, I was never one of those individuals who thought that all homeless people, first of all, deserve to be there. I've actually worked with people like that in my past. They want to be there. They. First of all, it's they. It's not us.
Oh, it's a collective, yeah.
Oh, it's a collective they, and they want to be homeless. They are drug addicts. They are alcoholics. They are lazy, and they want to be there. And mm-hmm. There is nothing further from the truth.
We met a lot of interesting people. There was a gentleman, I don't know if you remember, he was from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come over here. I mean, he was first generation, and he came here to the land of opportunity, and he had quite a bit of education, he and his wife, and they both lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. And they were on the street. They couldn't afford their mortgage. of course, people argue, well, you shouldn't live beyond your means. No, he had a job that supported his car note and his insurance and everything,
right.
And all of a sudden it was just taken out from under them, and it mm-hmm. was in such a way that it was literally the rug underneath you is gone,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, there are shelters like CAS Community Services, where we were last year.
Right.
But it's unfortunate that they're needed.
And unfortunately, too, there are not enough of them. There are not enough shelters. In Detroit, we learned that there are something like 83,000 people who are without a bed every night, without a place to... They can't even stand in a building. And there was one man... There were different people who really made strong impressions on me that I will probably take for the rest of my life. And one was a musician. His name has totally escaped me now, but he was a musician, classically trained cellist, spoke very well, dressed very well, had multiple degrees, did everything right, and he was playing for change with his case open at Hart Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And that can only take you so far. And
right.
He ended up homeless, of course. He is now employed. But he went through this period of time where he was just flat out homeless. And as I said, he spoke well, he was educated, multiple degrees. You know, he had done everything right, and there he was homeless. Yeah, it can happen to anybody. That's the scary part.
And that's exactly the point behind the homelessness marathon, is we have all these preconceived notions about homelessness people, mm-hmm. and who they are and where they belong and what they should do,
exactly.
and how to fix their lives. But this is the 14th annual homelessness marathon. This mm-hmm. has actually been going for quite some time. Lynn, you know a lot of the background, correct?
Yeah, and we do.
What is some of the background?
We do have an interview coming up with Jeremy, and he explains some of the background too. But
and who's Jeremy? Jeremy Alderson.
Jeremy Weir Alderson is the director of the Homelessness Marathon, and he had a radio show, little tiny radio show, and he billed himself as nobody because he was speaking for everybody basically, and he was no particular star. He was just a person.
That was upstate New York. Yes.
Okay. Yes, and he thought he would. He's one of his passions is homelessness, and he thought he would do a one shot, one time, 1 hour kind of show about this homelessness thing, and it just took off from there. And that was 14 years ago. And if I can get very cliche, the rest is history.
Yeah,
it's gone from 1 hour to 14
hours overnight.
And it's in different cities each year.
Different cities every year, and it's outside every year, mm-hmm. where it's cold. He has a couple southern sites in the past,
right.
But it was because something else was going on. He was down in Mississippi right after Katrina, so
yeah,
you know. At 20 degrees, or even if it's warm down there, it's still a disaster.
Right.
But last year, Dennis, if you recall, we had almost standard Detroit weather. We had freezing fog.
It was nothing, yeah, to us.
Yeah, but it was
cold.
It was cold.
No, I guess my point is...
I felt you shivering from the studio.
I guess my point by that, I wasn't to trivialize it. It was the opposite. Is for us, we're used to Michigan weather. Mm-hmm. We go indoors mm-hmm. to get warm,
right.
and we're okay. Okay.
Right.
Your point is it was...
But we had freezing fog, mm-hmm. and there were people outside in the stuff. And it was the kind of thing where we were situated in a building where we could look across the street, and at some point we couldn't look across the street because we had this fog, and then the fog got white, and then it fell to the ground and made a horrible ice situation, traffic accidents, all that business. But the bottom line is there were people who were out there getting this stuff on them, you know, and this freezing fog freezes over everything, whether you're a human being or whether you're a sidewalk. So we had, what we were working with was a broadcast booth that was made out of 1x3s, plastic staples, and Jeremy...
Not plastic staples, plastic.
No, plastic, comma.
Okay.
Yeah, plastic, comma, staples. And Jeremy and the people he was interviewing were sitting on metal, like folding church chairs, and covered over with some Afghans and things that somebody had made.
A bunch of kids had made.
Yeah, and donated them to mm-hmm. the shelter. And they were temporarily using those to try to keep their laps warm and their backs warm. And
it was funny because we all had jobs to do. And one of mine, I don't know if you remember this, Lynn, I was asked to take those blankets and those Afghans and mm-hmm. put them up in the actual booth behind.
Right.
So it would be
as a backdrop,
but also so, and then they would make comments about it because this was televised also.
Yes.
Or recorded for later viewing. But anyway, so as I'm putting these up, I'm thinking, oh man, these are going to come in handy. And sure enough, they did because as it got colder, they did need uh-huh. to take these off from behind them.
Yes.
And I mean, let's face it, I mean, Jeremy, he's winterized,
yeah.
you know, he has insulation, and he was still cold. What I mean is he has a beard. That's what I meant.
Right, right.
And he had on thick coats.
Thank you, is exactly what I meant.
He was changing his socks about every hour or so to keep his feet warm and dry. And that was part of the procedure because he was out in this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to stress that this is not a fundraising event.
Right.
So all of these people are coming out. I mean, what would you say? How many people were standing in line?
Oh my gosh.
To talk about this.
Okay, just in the line and what you're that's a really good point. Across from Jeremy's booth, mm-hmm. in quotes, was a teepee like structure.
Testimony.
And it was a teepee, but it was
teepee
tower.
Of
it was called
tower
the Tower of Testimony.
But
it was a teepee shape with the same wood, you know, the same kind of wood, and they put plastic around that.
Right.
They had a light over the top, a microphone, and the camera was was most of the time trained on that, mm-hmm. at least one of the cameras.
Right.
And the people would line up, like you said, out in the cold, mm-hmm. kind of like half of them in the lean-to, half of them out. Now, mm-hmm. the good news is the shelter was right there, mm-hmm. and they had a lot of people in the warm shelter, and mm-hmm. they had plenty of warm things to drink inside. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of people waiting their turn. I can't, at any given time, maybe 8 or 10 people outside
right.
waiting.
And I think when you think about the word shelter, you think about somebody going into sort of a camp-type setting where you have all these cats and what have you. They didn't have beds. They were in out of the cold sleeping in chairs because mm-hmm. that's what was available. The beds were taken.
That's right.
And it was better to be in this warm area, in this warm, semi-warm room, mm-hmm. is sitting in a chair, nodding off. That was a better option than being in the street under a viaduct someplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they actually served the meal across the street mm-hmm. Because we were there, and they treated us like guests, which was really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, Ed, the operations mm-hmm. guy, he walked me across. He said, well, let's go bring food back from across the street mm-hmm. for everybody here. He did a head count or whatever. And there was also the Reverend
Faith Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a church across the street that had some sort of facility that
well,
had set up all this food.
They owned all this.
They
owned the buildings, yeah. the shelter itself, and then the place across the street was a kind of administration, and then downstairs where they served the food. There was a whole big kitchen down there.
Right.
Wow.
It was amazing.
And there was a gym that had 10 bikes, I think it was.
At least 10 bikes.
10 spinning bikes. And as you pedaled, the pedal power was able to offset some of their energy costs for electricity.
It was like a green
There you go. That's what we
gym.
Need to do.
Well, they wrote it up in USA Today. They showed us the article. It was amazing. This was the first of its kind in the country. They did so many things there that were the first. They actually put the people that wanted to, they put them to work.
Yes.
First, they would have people go out and to some of the areas in Detroit and apparently illegally disposed of tires, rubber tires. Car tires is a huge problem in many major cities.
Yeah.
It's no different in Detroit. So what they did was they would go and they'd find these tires, bring them back, and they would, I guess, recycle them is the best way to put it, by using this machine that would shred them. And then they, in turn, took the shredded rubber and made mats out of it.
Like doormats.
Doormats you put on your front porch. Mm-hmm. And they'd been commissioned by University of Michigan, Michigan State, mm-hmm. U of D, Mercy, and a lot of other, not only institutions, but companies to be able to, mm-hmm. to put these together. So they actually earned a wage.
Right.
Amazing.
And a lot of these folks were able to have that sort of job where they would not be employable other places, where they may have been a little developmentally disabled.
Or they didn't have an address, which is kind of important when you're applying for a job.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, just not having an address alone, you don't think about these things. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of take them for granted. I have to say the food was really good. Well, I was down there when they were making it, and they're like, do you think this is going to be enough?
Have you ever had not good food, Dennis?
You know, that's a trick question.
Yeah, yeah.
With an easy answer, no. Except with cranberries. I'm not a big fan. But anyway, so Lynn and I, we stayed there. We were there the entire time. We helped. They asked us to do a lot of helping mm-hmm. because we took phone calls from all over the country.
All over North America.
Basically.
Yeah.
We did. We had calls from Ireland, like mm-hmm. you said. So we were doing that, and everything had to be in sync. We got to work with Michael, who's Jeremy's son.
Right.
Awesome. Awesome people.
He was the chief engineer, and it was real radio. We were operating the board. We were patching phone calls through. We did it all. It's a real broadcast.
It was cool.
And this year, the broadcast is in Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all kinds of – there's a lot out there. Take a look at the homelessnessmarathon.org website. There is so much information out there, and the history is out there. And, oh, my gosh, there's so much out there about this year's marathon, including a schedule. This is actually not helter-skelter. It is planned.
All right. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Kristen, and you're listening to Impact, our public affairs talk program here, and we are featuring the nonprofit event called the Homelessness Marathon. This is the 14th annual one, and it's going to be broadcast here on 89.3 or WHFR.FM on the internet from 7 p.m. tomorrow evening until 9 a.m. Thursday morning. And this is not a fundraiser. It is just an awareness to find out really what does homelessness mean mm-hmm. here in America. And if we're going to take a real quick music break here, and then I'm going to go into an interview that Lynn had the pleasure of doing with Jeremy Alderson, who heads this up. So stay tuned for this awesome interview coming up right now.
This is Jeremy Alderson, and he is the director of the Homelessness Marathon. Welcome to Impact, Jeremy.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. How did the Homelessness Marathon begin 14 years ago?
You know, I always wish I could say that an angel had come out of the sky and told me to do it or some glorious thing like that. But really, I just had a chance to get some extra time on the station I was on, and I wasn't even sure what I would do with it. But I said, sure, let me go a little longer. And then it dawned on me I might as well devote the time to something I cared about, which was homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea just kind of grew on me. I never thought I would do it more than once, actually.
Oh, okay. How are the locations chosen? When I know there's a different city every year. How do you decide what location you're going to broadcast?
You know, that's another one of those things. People always want me to say, I mean, the press, when we go to a city, the press wants me to say, well, we're here because you're so awful, or we're here because of this. But actually, it's more complicated than that. We have to have a good affiliate in the area where we're going to be,
mm-hmm.
so that the broadcast can be heard there,
mm-hmm.
and there has to be an accessible homeless population. There has to be enough. There's plenty of good affiliates, but they're in rural areas. We can't really do it there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that narrows the list of places down, and then we look for places where we haven't been, and we look for a place that's different from where we've been in the last two or three years to get a different kind of flavor to the broadcast. So it's really a kind of complex process, but it usually then boils down to one or two choices, and we go to the place we think is best.
Okay. How did Kansas City get chosen for the 2011 broadcast?
Well, you know, that's an example of what I'm talking about. First of all, we have a great affiliate there, KKFI. It's a 100,000-watt radio station,
wow.
which is very powerful, reaches a huge area. It's a big city, so that there's a really big homelessness problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the Midwest. We hadn't been to the Midwest in years, so it just seemed like a logical choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how would you compare that to Detroit, which is where the 2010 broadcast generated?
Well, I would have to say, first of all, that, you know, it's tough to find a city with problems as severe as Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that is not to underestimate the problem in Kansas City. Kansas City has, in the metro area, around 13,500 homeless people. They only have about 3,500 beds for them, so they've got a shortfall of at least 10,000 beds for the homeless people here.
Wow.
Like Detroit, they have a lot of abandoned housing, but not as much as Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the biggest difference we find in Kansas City is that there's more response to the broadcast. We had a fabulous response in Detroit from the radio station, from the providers, CAST Community Social Services, and so forth. But the press really couldn't have cared less about
mm-hmm.
us. And here in Kansas City, we're getting more notice taken of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many stations actually broadcast that first year, back 14 years ago now?
Just one. We were on WEOS
mm-hmm.
in Geneva, New York, which was at the time I think it was 1,500 watts, a small station that mostly broadcast to rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, like I said, just intended to be a one-time thing. That was the station where I did a regular talk show, and I just wanted to do this as a special. It was only after the show was over that I was astonished by how much it had meant to me. Not that many people had heard it, and it wasn't that broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
But people came up after the broadcast, they gave me money, people I didn't even know, to defray the costs and so forth. And that's when I realized that the concept had really worked in some way, had really reached people in some way. It was, so to speak, in radio terms, a kind of hit. And that's when I thought, oh, well, this could work out on a broader basis, and it was only after that broadcast was over that I decided to put it up on the satellite. So I kind of compare that to, I say it's like falling in love with a girl you think is poor,
mm-hmm.
and then finding out that she's rich.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Okay. And from the humble beginnings of the single station, experimental, if you will, sort of broadcast that you did all those years ago, how many stations are actually handling the marathon this year?
There's going to be, at the current count, it's about 133,
mm-hmm.
and about 10 of those, I don't know the exact number, are going to rebroadcast it. They're not set up to take it live, so, you know, probably about 120, 125, something like that, are going to carry it live.
Okay. Are you pretty much coast to coast in the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And what about other countries?
Well, we are not in other countries. There is a Canadian Homelessness Marathon, which is our sister broadcast, and we'll join up with them briefly during the night, but they do a totally separate broadcast focusing on issues in Canada.
Okay.
And the TV that we're going to have this year is going to be on a website in Ireland, and it may be picked up elsewhere.
But, wow.
Basically, we are confined to being an American broadcast.
Okay, all right. But the idea that you're running from one end of the country to the other, that's spectacular, that we're getting the word out there that way. Do you have any stories that really moved you over the past 14 years, either individuals or organizations you worked with, or something that you're actually remembering from every year?
There are many stories, and they're not even necessarily the stories that would sound so dramatic to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting into this field, I think, is a little bit like you go to medical school and you have to deal with the first time you see blood or something, and you wonder
right.
if you can handle it.
Right.
The first time I sat in the booth, in the broadcast booth, with a mother weeping because she had had her children taken away from her because she was homeless, boy, that broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real challenge that homeless people face. You know, if you're a poor mother and they find out that you're homeless, instead of giving you a home, they take away your kids a lot of the time. So that's a really rough thing. And I remember talking to I guess a boy of maybe 10 or 11,
mm-hmm.
and he remembered the time he had been living in a parking garage with his mother, and
mm-hmm.
Just the dignified way that he recalled it. And when I asked him, you know, what do you think about people who might be living in that parking garage now where you were?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? He just said, it's a shame. It doesn't sound like much, but it was so dramatic to me because he had a clarity, a moral clarity,
yes.
at 10 or 11, which our society still doesn't have after 30 years of this homelessness crisis. So there's been many moments that have really affected me and have really touched me, and more than I could recount here, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you ever do any sort of follow-up with some of these some of the folks from other cities? I know that it's so much time is involved in making the new broadcast, and you know you're moving on, but do you have any contact with some of your former homeless people?
The short answer is no. Once
okay.
in a blue moon, we hear something. But, you know, the homeless population isn't so easy to keep track of for anybody.
Sure.
And when you leave a city and you're not even there anymore, it's pretty much impossible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Just curious. And how do we get a handle on homelessness? Are we doing that strictly through the government? Is it the shelters and the charities working with the government? Is it through the school system? How do we obtain a count, if you will, of the homeless problem?
Well, the count is done annually with volunteers who go out, usually in January, and they do what's called a point in time count.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows it's not perfect, but it's the best they can do.
Okay.
And in this field, there are, you know, fabulous organizations. Churches do great work. Synagogues, mosques, houses of worship are very committed in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Local governments do things. Charities do things. But the real failing is with the federal government, which has not exercised any real leadership, is doing pretty much everything wrong. And if we keep on going the way the federal government is going, you can be 100% sure this problem will never be solved.
Well, that's definitely a shame. All right. Anything you'd like to tell the listeners who are tuning in at it's Tuesday afternoon that we're talking with you, Jeremy. And boy, tomorrow night, starting at 7 o'clock, we have the marathon, and we'll be covering all 14 hours right here on WHFR. Anything special you'd like to tell the listeners?
Yeah, I got a bunch of things I'd like to tell the listeners. So, of course, you got to cut me off because remember, I talk for 14 hours at a time. But first of all, I want to say that homeless advocates, long before I was even in this field, have been warning that what is affecting homeless people is affecting everybody. I used to say, right from, I think, that first broadcast, when the canary dies in the coal mine, it's not a veterinary problem. That was my way of saying it. This isn't just about homeless people. This is about something gone wrong in our society, that people are falling out the bottom. And during the years when the homeless advocates were raising that warning, the bankers and people like that and the politicians were saying, oh, the stock market will stay up forever. You can buy a house and you don't have the money to pay for it and it'll be just fine. If we had listened as a society to the homeless advocates and the anti-poverty activists instead of the bankers and the politicians, we'd be 100 times better off today.
Mm-hmm.
We were sold all this false promises, all this false assurances, and what did we have? We had a mortgage crisis. We had a complete meltdown of the economy right in the housing market,
mm-hmm.
right where the homeless advocates were warning people that there were troubles. So I would say if you listen to this, you're going to get a better picture of what's going on in the country if you listen to the homelessness marathon mm-hmm. than you will get if you listen to any 1,000 hours of debate in our Congress, because there is a total divorcement from reality in the politics of the United States today. We know for a fact that things are bad and getting worse, and what every person knows is that when the bankers needed money, the money was just shoveled at them with no questions asked. And when poor people need money or middle-class people need money, now all of a sudden we're talking about budget cuts. So I would say it's not just about listening to this broadcast about homeless people. It's about listening to what's really going on in the United States of America and getting a better handle on that.
Mm-hmm. I can hear the passion in your voice, and it's truly a moving experience to be part of the Homelessness Marathon. And some of the spots we've been running on WHFR make it very clear that this is not a fundraising opportunity. This is strictly an awareness opportunity, and we want as many people as possible to be aware of this horrible homeless situation in the U.S. Jeremy Alderson, thank you so much for your time, and we'll be in touch as we cover those 14 hours out of Kansas City starting tomorrow night. Thank you for being part of Impact.
Thank you so much for having me.
WHFR.FM is proud to present the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America. Broadcasting live from the streets of Kansas City, Missouri, and featuring the voices of the homeless themselves.
I wish they would do something about getting people off the streets.
Homeless people deserve housing, not shelters.
I'm a veteran. I'm a disabled veteran. I live in a tent down the flats.
I certainly would like to see a world where there's no homeless people.
And we need housing that people can afford.
We're in danger as long as we continue to paint homeless people in this country as somehow other.
This event is not a fundraiser, but an awareness-raising broadcast intended to better understand the homelessness issue. That's the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon on WHFR.FM, starting at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, February 23rd, and running through 9 a.m. on the 24th.
This is 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You are listening to Impact here. It's our local public affairs talk programming about that features nonprofit organizations or events or people that are going on that you may want to know about. And right now, we are covering the Homelessness Marathon, the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon. And here with me in the studio today are Lynn Grunst and Dennis Reimars, who were very, very active members from 89.3 as we hosted the event. We were the host station, and they were all over the place while they were down there. While we were listening there, Lynn, to your interview with Jeremy Alderson, who is the DJ, director, producer, what you know, the
founder.
Everything founder of the Homelessness Marathon, he mentioned the whole political standpoint of homelessness, mm-hmm. and just how there's more done in the 14 hours of this broadcast and more awareness raised than any kind of debates that go on there in Congress. Mm-hmm. And you guys started mentioning something about getting the politicians there last year and talking with them. How did all that go, Lynn Dennis?
He was incredibly challenged, Jeremy was, in just trying to get representatives to come in. But he did have representatives come in, and some of our guests from the city, for example, were late. And at some level, you wondered if anybody was getting it. And it was just, that was kind of frustrating. On the other hand, we were talking to Ireland at one point, because there's a homeless situation around the world, of course. But Ireland was one of the countries that we talked about and talked to, I guess.
They called in for, like, I don't know, it was at least an hour. I remember that we had overlapping time.
Yeah.
And then we also did the same thing in Canada, too.
Right.
And not surprisingly, they face similar issues. Both Ireland and Canada face the same issues. Now, something that's really important, and our station advisor, Jay Kornick, mm-hmm. mentioned this to me. It was reinforced and reiterated by Jeremy countless times, but Detroit was in a really bad way last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were the third most, like, we had the third biggest homeless problem mm-hmm. in the country mm-hmm. based on just overall homelessness, and that was we were behind New York and L.A., but you have to remember that we have far less people than New York or L.A.
Right.
So by per capita, we were in the worst situation,
number one
as far as homeless. And that played into, you know, Jeremy mm-hmm. deciding where to go for last year. And, you know, of course, you know how we met him and everything. And he starts planning this way in advance. I mean, it was incredible. We had a lot of interaction with him prior to the actual marathon. Of course, we were the host station. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, most importantly, there's not a lot of people paying his way.
Oh, not at all.
Isn't that an interesting?
Not
at
all.
He did get grants at one point, mm-hmm. And I know that most of that money is gone.
Right.
So a lot of this is his own money.
Yes. Yeah. It's an absolute passion of his. And what last year there was a homeless vigil out here on campus at Henry Ford Community College.
I know, the paper covered it. Was wonderful.
And he was part of that last year. We were out there holding candles. And
oh, you mean 2010? Okay.
Yeah, he was here on one of his visits to Detroit, and the timing was such that I asked him if he was interested in attending this, and of course he was. And he shared some of his personal stories. Now, at one point, he was technically homeless,
right.
And it gets into the way the government counts whether you're homeless or not. He was a self-described sofa surfer.
Right, right.
And what that meant is that he didn't have his own home, he didn't have his own room even, but he was sort of crashing on friends' couches for a month or two at a time, and then he would move on to another friend, another location.
Right.
And he, in effect, was homeless.
Right.
So he talked about that. And one of the questions I asked him off air last night was, the way the government counts the homeless numbers, I said, you were not included in those numbers at the point where you were doing the sofa surfing. And he said, absolutely. The other thing that's very frustrating when you try to get your arms around the homeless situation is there are a lot of kids in that situation. And kids who are attending schools, the schools are counting them as homeless because they're not in their real nuclear home with their parents. They may have the entire family, the kids and the parents may be staying with an aunt or a grandmother or some other relative. They are considered homeless by the school system. The government does not.
So what you're saying is if little Johnny and Sue mm-hmm. and their mother live with their aunt, their mm-hmm. mother's sister.
Right.
Technically, they are homeless, and the school would count them that way.
Yes.
But the government wouldn't.
That's correct.
Because they're not relying upon any public assistance whatsoever.
That's correct.
Shelter or otherwise.
That's correct.
That's an interesting, that really does skew the numbers, doesn't it?
It means that the numbers are horribly underreported.
Right.
So as bad as we think our situation is, it's probably worse.
Is there a remedy for that? Can they go to the schools and then add that on? Or is that just too, that's,
I don't know. I don't have the background to answer the question.
Something else that when we were down there last year, I found this is extremely interesting, and I hope I'm allowed to say it, but mm-hmm. I talked to Ed, and we were walking across the street from the actual shelter itself to where they were serving the food. We were going to get the food. And I asked, I had a million questions for him, as you can imagine. I'm sure they were similar, if not exactly the same as yours. And one of them that I asked, because he showed me this really, really nice, slick folder kind of brochure. It was high glossy paper, full color, oversized.
Yes.
Gord, do you remember this conversation?
I do remember, yes.
And I said, you know, Ed, I don't want to, you know, it's not my place or whatever, but wouldn't the money that went, because I happen to know a little bit about printing costs and they're relatively expensive for what the product that they had. I said, wouldn't the money be better spent in other areas other than this literature or whatever? He literally stopped me on the sidewalk. He said, that's a great question. He said, you have to remember where the money is for this. He says, you have to remember who we're going after for these fundraisers. In many cases, these are people that have a lot of money and they're paying. And he goes, if you charge $50 or $100 a plate for these fundraising dinners, you can't come in with stuff written on a cocktail napkin or whatever. You have to have this really whatever. He goes, so basically he goes, the ends do justify these means in this case, because that's how you appeal to these people. They see a brochure like this and all of a sudden they're writing checks. He goes, that's really the most important thing. Okay. I mean, I thought I had a great question, but he really put it out, you know,
right,
because he knows his business better than
he had a great answer for it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which is something that probably a lot of people may not have even of thought of. I probably would have thought the same thing. I was like, well, gee, you're spending all this money on this brochure, but in order to reach those people that are willing to donate the kind of funds that you need.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's they might want to see something a little nicer, a little fancier than just a black and white printed.
And it was awesome because we were on the sidewalk at that point. We walked into this other building, which they are painting. This is the money that let them put a fresh coat of paint on here. And there's no lead. And it's safe and it's sanitary. And it was really clean. And downstairs when we went to eat, this is great. I'm down there, right, getting ready to go get food. We were going to bring it back across the street. Well, the people that were there, the people that worked there as well as the people eating, had no idea who we were, who I was. So I was kind of, for lack of a better term, accosted at the door. First, this gentleman comes up with hand sanitizer for me. He goes, and then he apologized. He said, I'm not saying you're dirty. He goes, but if you're going to, you know, and he's doing that. And then somebody else is throwing a plate in my hand. You know, it was just like, boy, it was tag team times four. My point is, I felt really comfortable. I felt really wanted. And I wasn't there to eat. You know what I mean? It was, I don't know. The whole dynamic was so interesting and so different from anything I'd ever experienced.
Right.
And again, Lynn, you said it a million times and I'll continue. The experience changed my life.
Yes.
Really.
Right.
Really did.
And a perfect example of how you were dealing with real people, people with manners, people with education. You weren't dealing with a bunch of junkies.
No.
You weren't dealing with a bunch of alcoholics.
These people had dignity and they treated me with dignity. And
absolutely,
they didn't matter who I guess that's my whole point, is it didn't matter who I was.
Right.
I'm from the homelessness marathon and I'm trying to help you. No. We're here to serve you.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I'm here to help you. Wait a minute.
No. Yeah. And then we argued, and then we thumb wrestled, and then I finally won.
And I will add.
Of course, I won. Right. In my version.
Dennis was the one who was involved with all the food. I was back at the home ranch working.
Okay, so. Miss, I'll bring my own organic peanut butter and the special rye bread flown in from Poland, I think. Anyway, that was really good. The food they served actually was really good. I mean, that's not something.
And that actually also, though, points out, too, just how many people are needed to run something like this.
Oh,
like,
man.
Lynn, you were very behind the scenes in a different way than Dennis was.
Absolutely, yeah. And we were there, again, we were there for more than, my day started at 10 o'clock in the morning. The broadcast started at 7 o'clock at night, and I was working that whole morning picking up
people. No, you've been working for months.
Lynn, for everybody listening,
Other than Jeremy, on our front here, Lynn did so much. She did more than anyone else. She helped find the location. She helped. She had the van. The van that we spun out in on
the
our
van.
Way.
The van.
Oh, man. Can we for a second talk about Sherry and
Paul?
Paul, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Will you introduce them? Because I'm not. I think Paul's from San Francisco.
Actually, they are on the agenda for this year again.
Okay.
Sherry's story was one of those absolutely compelling stories where a number of years ago, I'm thinking 8-9 years ago, she had a babe in arms, little, tiny mm-hmm. baby, and she was homeless in Minnesota where it gets as cold as it's been around here for the last couple of weeks.
Is that Sherry Hunkala? Is that her?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Sorry.
And she, the baby almost died because of the cold. a number of, if I can just divert one homeless question or little statement that goes back in my life, probably, oh my goodness, 15 years maybe, there was a lady by the name of Darlene, and I have no idea if she's still working on this project or not, but it was Darlene the Blanket Lady. She had this rickety old van. It was a full-size Econoline van, and this thing was packed to the hilt every night, and she just, they knew her van, they, the homeless people, they knew her van, and they knew when they saw this kind of not great van going up and down Cass, that they'd come out of the doorways. You and I would drive through and never see all these people, and they knew her van, and they would come out and they would get blankets, because a blanket or a quilt was like being royalty when you're on the street, because it was a way of keeping you warm.
Sure.
She told me the story of finding a mother and a child in a doorway, no blankets, and she gave them enough blankets to hopefully keep them warm. The child had tears frozen on the cheeks. Mm. We can't even comprehend this stuff. And the child wasn't crying that caused this. It wasn't crying. It was just the fact that it was so cold that the eyes were tearing, and then those tears froze on the cheeks of the child. So that's another story that stayed with me forever. Paul was homeless at one point, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, and he has an activist group.
Paul definitely was.
Paul
Bowden, absolutely.
Yeah. And he has an activist group, and they will be speaking, I believe, very early in the morning that they're going to be part
of. Well, that's
of
what
it.
They did last year, too. Jeremy takes about an hour or two, and actually gets some shut-eye for a little bit. They had a cot there for him, and Sherry and Paul spoke for that time, and then there was another gentleman. This is interesting, because when I first came in, and he was kind of a smart aleck at first, mm-hmm. the guy with the huge beard, and I can't remember his name.
I don't recall.
He looked a lot like whatever our version of Santa Claus. Anyway, he when I went in, and he was just a smart aleck, and I'm like, who is this guy? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Obviously extremely intelligent. I mean, his jokes were, you know.
Yes. Above you?
Yes. Some.
Do I hear music playing? Time for a break? Anyway, yeah, he may have been above my head. Anyway, big stretch, right?
Yeah.
But I had no, for like the first probably couple hours, mm-hmm. I had no idea who he was. And then he actually got on the air.
Yes.
And hosted a segment. And
yes.
that to me was just
yes.
like, and then he, all the stuff he'd been telling me, he'd been pulling my chain
right.
on a lot of things.
Right.
And I just really, really liked the guy.
Yeah.
You know exactly who I'm talking about.
I do know
about.
Exactly who you're talking about.
That is
about.
So cool.
But the group of people, there's another gentleman from, I think it was Tennessee, and
from Nashville, yes.
Yes, and he was part of the crew, the working crew.
He and his wife, yep.
They came up on their own dime. They didn't, there was no money for them. They did what they felt so strongly about doing.
Which we also did.
Yeah.
For everybody, Lynn and I tried really, really. We tried to make a go at getting out to Kansas City this year.
Yeah.
And just certain things prohibited it, but we're still going to be an active part of this.
And we're watching to see where 15 is. But we had, in fact, one of the women who's very involved with the Homelessness Marathon for the last, I think, this will be the sixth year, and I can't remember her name. I think it's Julie, but at any rate, she was program director for this little tiny station out in Maine, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. and she got hooked, just like we did, just like Dennis and I did. So,
you're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM. We are the station making waves, and we're listening to Impact. Wow, I don't know what happened there. You're listening to Impact, and we're talking about the Homelessness Marathon that is coming up here, the 14th annual one, and sorry about that. And we are trying to get on the phone here with Bill Keith, who's on hold, and he's with WSDP, another radio station. Lynn, actually, can you come?
Okay.
I don't think he can hear me. But anyway,
I can hear you.
Oh, good. I did get you on there. Okay. Thank you, Bill.
No problem.
Had a light not flashing on there, so I wasn't sure if we had you or not. So Bill is now joining us here in the studio via phone. And Lynn, you and Bill both are together at WSDP, and
right.
you actually have some important stuff here that you want to share.
Right. One of the things I wanted to get from Bill's perspective was the you know, this is a college station, and frankly, most of us here are well above college age but at the radio station. But SDP is a radio station located in a high school, and the high school students are very interested and excited about the Homelessness Marathon. So, Bill, tell us about the teenagers and how a teenage station, quote-unquote, is involved with the Homelessness Marathon.
Well, we like to, I guess, think of ourselves as a community radio station, and it just seemed like it made perfect sense to get involved with this. It was such a great opportunity to help shed light on an issue that is so important for people to learn about. And when we talked about it at our staff meeting, the high school students were right on board right away. They jumped right in and practically signed up for all the available in-studio shifts and wanted to be part of it and help in any way they can. So I was really excited to see that.
And WSDP also will be broadcasting from 7 p.m. Wednesday through 9 a.m. on Thursday. So the students will be there on doing the top of the hour breaks at 4 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the morning. And they're going to be part of this.
They're not going to be alone either, are they?
No, they aren't.
Bill, did they have to get some kind of special permission from parents?
Yeah,
we had permission slips for each of the students to sign, and their parents, I'm sure, were more than willing to have them get involved. They're on midwinter break this week, so it wasn't like they'd be here at 5 in the morning and then have to go to class the next morning.
Right.
Yeah, but some people.
they were really excited to be involved with it.
Hour 8 for the Homelessness Marathon this year is from 1 a.m. until 2 a.m., and they are going to have a couple presentations about teen homelessness, which I think is really going to touch these guys. There's a difference because they are still children, and to be thrust into that position of being out on the street and not knowing how to care for themselves properly, there's a lot of bad stuff going on out there. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's on teen safety?
Yeah, it's just teen homelessness in general.
Wow.
So Jeremy has a sector on that, and I'm looking forward to that too. So, and I'm thinking these kids, although they're not going to be able to identify with being homeless as such, I think it's going to be an awareness for them too. We had a we were out at downtown Plymouth for the Ice Fest, and it was incredibly cold that day. And one of the things that I mentioned to these kids who were out there with 1, 2, 3 hour shifts was, okay, you're freezing. Okay, I can see you're in pain. And when you go home, you're going home in a warm car. And when you get home, you're going home to a warm house, and you'll take a warm bath, and you'll have hot food, and everything is going to come back to normal after this, you know, extreme temperature exposure. And I said, think about this. I said, there are people your age, there are people all ages who are out on the street, and this is it. It doesn't get any better than this until, you know, springtime comes, that they're out there in this type of, horrible weather conditions. And they, at that point, they really got it.
So, Bill, you are around these kids all the time. Mm-hmm. How do you think this is going to impact them?
Well, like anything, I think it's a learning opportunity for them, not only just for our listeners, but they'll be actually in the studio hearing the program too. So I think that they're going to be able to learn about homelessness from a perspective that maybe they haven't had before, because you don't often hear from homeless people, and a lot of times you don't really hear from the people that are working with the homeless or the advocates for the homeless. So they're going to get a first-hand opportunity to hear from these folks and be involved in a broadcast that really kind of sheds light on that. So I'm really excited for them.
How many kids do you have volunteering over there?
I think we have somewhere between 5 and 10 kids that will be here throughout the night at various times. So it should be a lot of fun.
Have you prepped them at all and said, hey, you know, this is the real world. This is well, I mean, no, it really is. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I don't know. My parents were pretty good about, you know, this is life and, you know, the difference between reality and, say, movies or TV or whatever. But this really is going to hit home. And a lot of people won't necessarily have been exposed to anything like this before, you know?
Well, and I think they're more knowledgeable than we probably give them credit for, though I'm sure it is going to be a big learning opportunity. So we haven't really done anything concretely to prep them for it, but we're going to probably let the program do the talking for itself and kind of reveal the whole issue to them.
And we'll be there with them, so in case anybody is very upset. Some of the stories are, I mean, and Dennis and I have talked about some of the stories. Jeremy talked about some of the stories in his interview. Some of the stories are incredibly moving.
Well, I should probably let you guys go. I had somebody just walk into the office, so.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill, so much for joining us and giving us the whole teenage perspective on it. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we have about 5 minutes left here. Mm-hmm. Is there anything, like maybe schedule-wise, you want to hit more? Let me reiterate one more time what we're talking about. You're listening to Impact. This is 89.3 WHFR.FM. And we are talking about the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon, which we are going to be broadcasting from this station, either 89.3 on your dial, or if you don't get our signal, you can also go to whfr.fm on the web, and we do stream live there as well. And it starts tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. That's Wednesday, February 23rd, 7 p.m. And it goes all throughout the night until 9 a.m. Thursday morning, February 24th. So if you're looking for a night out and a good, you know, a good long evening, or maybe you just can't sleep, you know, be sure to tune us in for this. And if anybody is listening that happens to be homeless, or you're formerly homeless, or you're about to be homeless, or you need help, or you need to talk to somebody, there is a number that you can call, and it's 866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-533-8688. So it's left out is the two words there that you can spell out. And you'll be able to get lots of information as well from the website homelessnessmarathon.org. And those links and keys there that you can get help and just find out what information you need. Lynn, was there anything else that you wanted to share here?
No, I would like to talk about the call-ins, though, a little bit.
Okay, let's do it.
That is a feature of the Homelessness Marathon. It does go on throughout the entire broadcast, and there are and the numbers that you can call, you'll be on hold for a little bit, but you will, the call, how does it go? The calls are answered in the order received.
Correct.
And that is true.
Correct.
That is true. Because
so don't hang up if you call just thinking you're going to get closer.
Right. Be patient, because you will have an opportunity to tell your story. And in so many ways, so many of the stories are, they're absolutely unique. You have people who have been homeless, people who are going through the situation where they're behind on their mortgage or behind on their taxes, and all of a sudden that's where they could be, is they could be out on the street, or they could have their homes absolutely swept away from them. But there is a schedule. The broadcast schedule is online. I encourage you to take a look at that and all the different individuals. One that I'm really looking forward to is Hour 13, which is 6 o'clock in the morning. So maybe if you're getting
you
up.
Might be up.
Maybe you're getting up, yeah. Let's see. Actually, that would be 7 o'clock our time. They're doing a sector on street poetry.
Oh.
So we'll have poets involved and, people who are involved in religious organizations. These are things Jeremy mentioned in his interview. But so many different sectors of the community are trying to do something good and trying to alleviate the homeless situation. And hopefully we can make a dent by making people more aware.
Well, I hope so, too, because I do believe that this event is definitely making an impact on the community. The 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon, tomorrow evening, 7 p.m., all the way through Thursday morning, 9 a.m. You can listen to it right here or at WSDP as well. They're going to be carrying it as well. So, but any questions, you can go to homelessnessmarathon.org to get even more information and also see the schedule as well. And on a little bit of a side note here, I would like to say farewell as the host of Impact, and the reins are being turned over here to Lynn Gruntz, who you've been listening to for this hour. She will now be the official host of Impact, and I know that she is going to carry on the great community involvement in nonprofit organizations that are around here, and you will be in very, very, very good hands. But thank you so much for joining me over the past, what's been like 8 months for Impact. And Lynn, thank you very much for being here today and also for being willing to take over the hosting of the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having both Dennis and I on, because, I mean, if you can't hear the passion in Jeremy's voice, you have to be able to hear it in our voices, because it truly was a life-changing experience. And thank you for turning over the reins of Impact. This has been a wonderful show. I listen to the podcast, and I'm always interested in the activities.
Well, so. Thank you, and I hope everybody else who is out there listening have a great day, and Lynn will be back on the fourth Tuesday of March with another nonprofit organization, people, or event that is going on that you may want to know a little bit more about. All right, so have a great day. This is 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
This is Salif Diarra, a local health worker in a remote village in Mali, West Africa. This is Mori, a child who survived malaria because of Salif's efforts. This is Bintu, a grateful mother, one of many in Salif's village. This is you, becoming part of the story. Help local health workers like Salif make the good go even further. Visit goodgoes.org to see the many ways you can help. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
WHFR.FM is proud to present the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America. Broadcasting live from the streets of Kansas City, Missouri, and featuring the voices of the homeless themselves.
I wish they would do something about getting people off the streets.
Homeless people deserve housing, not shelters.
I'm a veteran. I'm a disabled veteran. I live in a tent down the flats.
I certainly would like to see a world where there's no homeless people.
And we need housing that people can afford.
We're in danger as long as we continue to paint homeless people in this country as somehow other.
This event is not a fundraiser, but an awareness-raising broadcast intended to better understand the homelessness issue. That's the 14th Annual Homelessness Marathon on WHFR.FM, starting at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, February 23rd, and running through 9 a.m. on the 24th.
My name is Meera Batra. I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me? This is Jimmy. Every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., I am floating in a tin can. I'm stuck on the spaceship in the future. Tune in as I play a mix of indie rock, retro, world music, whatever I can find on the ship. Help me come home. Only on WHFR Dearborn, 89.3.
The Henry Ford Community College Music Department presents the 16th Annual President's Collage Concert on Saturday, February 26, 2011. The concert will take place at 8 p.m. in the Michael A. Guido Theater at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, located at 15801 Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Among the HFCC bands performing are the Henry Ford Big Band, the Symphonic Wind Ensemble, Vanguard Voices, and more, all under the direction of G. Kevin Dewey, Rick L. Goward, and Randall L. Knight. For ticket information for the 16th Annual HFCC President's Collage Concert, please call 313-943-2354. That's 313-943-2354.
Criminal justice studies are concerned with the preservation of peace, the prevention of crime, and the protection of life and property. A knowledge of the role of criminal justice in our society also serves to emphasize the importance of balancing the needs of society to maintain social order against the need to safeguard individual rights. For more information on the HFCC Associate Degree Program in Criminal Justice, contact the Criminal Justice Department at one of the following numbers: 313-845-6437, 313-845-9714, or 313-845-9859.
Magic Notebook? Magic Notebook? Hello? Hey, testing. Hello? Yes. Okay, all right, we're good.